Welcome to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. Conversations focused on how some of the world's top energy leaders are innovating to deliver clean, affordable, and reliable energy for the future.
Hello and welcome everybody to this episode of the Let's Clear the Air Podcast. We are excited that you joined us for a great conversation we're going to have with Sam Menefee. We're going to talk about all things pipeline safety management systems, tea culture, all that good stuff. But before we dive in, I should introduce myself. My name is Stuart Salters, and I am joined by my co-host, Brian Nix. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you for asking.
Awesome. Awesome. And Sam, we are very grateful for your time recording with us, talking about this important topic. So thanks for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
So you will see that we're down one co-host. Adam Murray is not with us today, so I get to play his role and ask him the icebreaker question. So, Sam, I think we've learned that you are about to be a new dad. You and your wife were expecting, so congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
But with that, what are you most looking forward to as a dad?
Well, as I've learned, there are all kinds of changes coming down the pike. Whether that's changes to our house and creating a nursery, changes to our schedule. But I think I'm really looking forward to the different phases of childhood. And so we're having a daughter. And so the different phases from newborn to infant to toddler, all the different unique challenges that they all bring, but the unique opportunity, personality that comes out for each one. And I'm also looking forward to getting lots of advice from other people. And so anyone I've talked to that's a parent, I always ask their advice. A lot of people give you unsolicited advice in general, but I think it's helpful to take a little nugget from someone and a little piece from someone else and see how it applies to your life a little bit. So always open to any words of wisdom from either of you as well.
Parents have no shortage of opinions on raising children, that's for sure.
What's your piece of unsolicited advice, Brian?
I don't know. Just take every day as its own day, because that's the one thing that I kind of didn't really know is how inconsistent kids are. As soon as you think you got them figured out, they, you know, completely change. So just like I said, take every day as a new day and move on with it. But yeah, having kids is wonderful. Probably the best part of being a dad is, you know, you come home, you got a big busy day, stressed out, whatever. You walk into the door and then your kid just runs at you and is like, you're the best person in the world. And this is the happiest moment of my life. And it just kind of makes all the other stuff you've been dealing with kind of go away. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Absolutely. And I think what you're looking forward to, Sam, is it's awesome, because that's the blessing, right? You know, there's good things, there's bad things, but there's good things about infants. There's good things about toddlers. There's good things about preteens. I don't know if there's any good things about teenagers, but I think there probably is somewhere deep down good things about teenagers. So it's, take every day as it comes.
That's awesome. Well, thank you both.
Well, let's dive into it. So give us a little bit more about you, Sam. What's your background? How'd you get where you are?
Sure. So I am currently a senior policy advisor at API, and I work in our midstream group, which includes pipelines primarily, but midstream also covers rail and trucking and marine assets. And API is likely known for its advocacy and policy work, but half or so of API also develops standards and recommended practices for the industry. And it was part of the reason API was formed back in 1919. And so we have about 800 standards across the industry, all the way from upstream, midstream, downstream, covering all facets and really looking to drive standardization and harmonization within the industry. And so within my role in pipeline, I cover pipeline safety management systems, safety culture, pipeline public engagement, public awareness, damage prevention, and then recently got plugged into some of the pipeline workforce development issues and some of the labor relations between pipeline operators and organized trades. I also work on the three-year strategic plan that API has with LEPA, the Liquid Energy Pipeline Association, and the annual performance report that we publish on pipeline safety trends. And my background is a little atypical for those in the energy industry. And my background is a lot of foreign policy. So definitely policy, but more on the international relations side. And so prior to joining API in 2015, I worked for a democracy implementation organization and took USAID and State Department grants and worked with pro-democracy activists in Syria and Lebanon. And so was organizing communications, strategic communications and strategic organization workshops with emerging politicians and local counselors and youth activists that were often living inside Syria and cross over into Turkey, do our trainings, and then go back inside Syria to implement those grants. And so I did that for about 2 years and was getting a little bit more concerned with the deteriorating security situation over there. And so joined API and was lucky enough to overlap with Stuart for a couple of years and his role in the pipeline space at API, and have really, despite my kind of lack of experience in the energy industry, tried to learn as much as I can from real true experts like Stuart and ask the dumb questions and really look to take every opportunity to figure out where I could learn. But when I joined API, I was really at an interesting time. So I joined API in April of 2015. And API published the first edition of Recommended Practice 1173 for Pipeline Safety Management Systems in July of that year. So was able to come on right at a time when, while the RP itself was finishing up, we were really developing a lot of the tools and the materials to help industry start that journey. And just maybe a little bit of background on safety management systems. They are really a framework for how you guide and organize a complex set of operations. Chemical and aviation and nuclear industries have really seen a lot of success on safety management systems. And so it's been a really great experience for me working on SMS for the 10 years that I've been at API, because it's helped me dive deeper into some of these more technical issues like integrity or leak detection, or in my role, public awareness, public engagement, damage prevention, and see how those programs kind of fit in and contribute to the whole umbrella or the whole framework, which is SMS.
Very cool. So yeah, you're talking about PSMs. PSMS, I guess, is your acronym. I'm used to process safety management, right, from the chemical industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been pretty... obviously, industry changing. I think it's made huge strides in making our industry safer. Oh, but that was, you know, that was a regulatory requirement through OSHA. So the PSMS, I'm gonna get that right eventually. Mm-hmm. Is that actually like a regulatory requirement, or is that just kind of voluntary industry participation in that?
Yeah, great question. Right now, it's voluntary. It's all voluntary right now through the Recommended Practice 1173. So it is a little bit different than the PSM world, which is regulated and required. SMS is all voluntary right now. We have seen the vast majority of industry implementing SMS. We do an annual survey every year. This year we had close to 80% of industry. Last year's we've had a little bit more, closer to 85% in terms of mileage. But when you look at 85% of industry implementing SMS on this kind of proactive voluntary basis, we've seen widespread adoption. Now, I would like to get that number up a little bit, but like to see us closer to 90, 95, 100%. But certainly we've seen widespread adoption, widespread commitment, and really growing and evolving maturity of the program as well.
That's great. So you have all this adoption, you go out, you do surveys, people respond back to what they're doing in the industry, and obviously you're making publications. So you have an annual report.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that a little bit, what that is and how that works? Yeah,
absolutely. So we actually just published the annual report. So if anyone needs some help sleeping at night, it really does a great job doing that. But it's up on www.pipelinesms.org. There are a couple links up to it there as well. But we do the annual survey and the annual report for kind of two main reasons. The first is for our external stakeholders, and it's really to help us demonstrate progress. And Brian, your previous question, I think one of the reasons we've been able to keep PSMS voluntary is because we've been able to demonstrate progress as an industry and mm-hmm. growing maturity and growing commitment. And so we use the annual survey and the annual report as a way to demonstrate to PHMSA and NTSB and NAPSR and a host of other important and external stakeholders that industry really is living PSMS on a day-to-day basis. It's not just a document that lives on a shelf somewhere that every 5 or 10 years we dust off and we look to see what needs to be revised, but it's really the way we do business each and every day. And so that annual survey asks operators, what progress they have made on their journeys. So have you done a leadership commitment? Have you done a gap assessment? Have you prioritized where your gaps are and what needs to be closed? Have you started evaluating your maturity? Have you done a safety culture assessment, conducted a management review? And so each year we've been able to witness more and more operators progressing along these kind of tangible implementation steps. And we like to showcase that progress in the annual report. Just to give a few metrics from 2024, we saw increases of 23% more operators conducting a management review, 22% more operators evaluating maturity, and 13% more operators assessing their safety culture compared to 2022 when we did the last full industry-wide survey. And so we always take that report once it's published, and like I said, go meet with career and political staff at PHMSA, go meet with staff members and board members at the NTSB, talk to the Pipeline Safety Trust, let them know what we're doing here. And again, the intent there is really to show, demonstrate progress. And in some ways, too, to say, you know what, regulation is not required at this point, because we actually think regulation would be a hinder to the progress we've seen. We think that a one-size-fits-all kind of check-the-box audit exercise would really put a cap on the benefits that SMS can bring. And it would really kind of, I think, hinder the scalable and the flexible nature of SMS. And that's, I think, one of the two of the best qualities about SMS is that it's scalable. It can be applicable for an organization of 5 employees to 5,000. It's flexible enough to incorporate a lot of the programs that your company is already doing. And so one of the things I like to tell people newer on the journey is you're doing a lot of SMS. You're probably doing 75 to 80% of it already. You're just not calling it SMS. And so the document SMS 1173 helps provide this kind of framework for how you organize your operations based on these 10 program elements. But it is not like you need to start from scratch and throw everything you have in the waste bin and figure out, okay, well, how are we going to do SMS? It's really just about organizing it and calling it SMS and figuring out a way to frame it around the 10 program elements. And the other reason we do the annual report is more kind of internally facing. We always ask operators what their top five hardest elements are to implement. We ask what the barriers are, what they're getting hung up on, where their challenges are, if areas of the document are unclear or harder to implement. And then we take those as an industry team and we start developing tools and training around them. So in years past, we've done whole workshops around one or two of the elements that respondents have said are really difficult for them. And we have an operator come in that may have a strong external engagement program and do a really in-depth share on what they do for external engagement so that others can really learn from it and take some of those leading practices back.
Interesting. Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Sam. I think one of the things that is important for folks to hear and to know about what 73 is just its impact on a company's safety culture and how that is a focus. And so I don't want to miss an opportunity to hear from you. Like, what is kind of the opportunity to help operators have a strong safety culture, and how does 1173 help with that?
Yeah, the document itself says that 1173 cannot function. You can't have a strong 1173 without a robust safety culture. So both of those things really go hand in hand, and implementing SMS will really help a company build and reinforce that safety culture. Safety culture is one of those hard, really hard things to get your hand around and your heads around. Honestly, I think if regulators thought that they could audit it effectively, they would have. And that's less a depiction of their capabilities. It's more a statement on the fact that safety culture is just very, very difficult to quantify within your companies and measure. But one of the tools that we have and that industry has built around SMS is a 3-year safety culture survey. And so we're now on this 3-year cycle of contractors participating 1 year, distribution operators participating another year, and then gathering and transmission operators participating in another year. And it's a way for operators to really gauge the safety culture sentiments within their company using a standardized question set, about 84 questions. Each one of those questions maps back to at least one element within SMS. And then you're able to track your safety culture participation and scores relative to others in your peer size, asset size. But really, taking a step back, you can't have a strong SMS without a strong safety culture. And really, that culture of learning from others, that culture of transparent reporting, that culture of sharing internal events, external events, I think really can't be emphasized enough, and really encourage people to start their SMS journey, if only to help reinforce their safety culture.
No, that's great. Thank you for expounding. And I don't know if you had one you wanted to ask.
Yeah. How many elements are there in the SMS?
There's 10 elements, 10 program elements. And the first one's leadership and management commitment. And we think that is probably the best place to start, and maybe even one of the most fundamental, most important ones. Getting your leaders on board with an SMS, I think, is probably the biggest roadblock. And I get it. There are so many things that operators have on their agendas, so many priorities, both regulatory, so many kind of leadership flavors of the day that you're trying to manage. But getting those leaders on board can help secure the buy-in for your program, can help set goals and objectives for you, for your company, and can really make sure that the resources are allocated appropriately, both the personnel and the budget that are there. So starts with leadership commitment, external engagement, risk management, operational controls, goes all the way through emergency response, documentation, and record keeping. So really the whole kind of life cycle of a pipeline asset are covered through those program elements.
Do you have notable practices, tools? I'm assuming that's kind of some guidelines or, you know, things that companies can implement on their own. Can you explain how that works?
So we have we just published a tool on noticeable practices, and that really is an example of what good looks like for an operator. So before I get into the tool, I'll touch on some of the assessment programs that API has, because there's a connection. But API has a third-party assessment program for operators, which allows an operator to sign up and have a team of assessors come out, look through your program, and develop scores for you to help figure out where you are in your journey, how mature your programs are.
Kind of like an audit group that goes on.
Yeah, very, very similar to that, but they really make a point of not using audit, and Stuart will know this, and just trying to stay away from the kind
of letter word.
Yeah, go down the list to check the box or not check the box, and more of all the assessors are lifetime pipeline career people, worked for industry, worked for potentially a regulator, and are now either doing this as kind of a side hustle or are still involved in the industry to some extent. So they really have a good breadth of perspective and experience here. And it's almost a cross-functional team. You may have an operations person, you may have an engagement person, maybe you have a field person as part of that team. And so they will come in to an operator, do a couple days at the headquarters, interview some of your personnel, review some of your programs and procedures, and then go out to a field office and do something similar there. And so each time that assessor team goes out and they see a leading practice that they think are you know, valuable, beneficial, that others could learn from, they tag it as a notable practice. And so this tool that we have compiles all those notable practices across the, I think API has done 27 assessments so far, and kind of separates them by program element. So you have leadership and management commitment, and then within that you have top management, external you have internal engagement, external engagement, and groups the notable practices by program element and even sometimes by sub element. And the point of that really is so that if you're just starting out on implementation and you have no idea where to start and you're overwhelmed and you have people breathing down your neck that you have to do SMS, and you have your board of directors thinking that SMS should be done and you should be complete, but you know SMS is a cycle of continuous improvement, you're never quite done with it, you could open up this tool and figure out, okay, if I'm going to start with leadership and management commitment, what are some of those leading practices that I know have worked for another operator? And then if you wanted to take it a step further and you wanted to really do more of a deep dive on some of those practices, you could contact me, you could contact the SMS at api.org mailbox and say, hey, I really have a question. I really want to know more about the weekly videos that this operator did to engage their staff on SMS. And we could pair you up with that operator and you could have an offline discussion or really kind of an in-depth share. So it's meant to be kind of a an initial sharing and exchange of leading practices and an almost a jumping off point for some further discussions.
Yeah, kind of like a collaborative best practices thing.
Absolutely. Almost like a community of practice. But I think ultimately we're looking to build that to be a little bit more interactive. Right now, it's just a living document that's on sms.org. But I think it's a good place to start.
Yeah, I think I also like that you're sharing. You're not company agnostic. You're sharing which operators are doing what and giving that feedback and having them connect with each other. That's pretty cool.
I think the best, the most valuable parts of our SMS team meetings are the operator exchanges. When operators can talk to another operator and say, I'm having a really hard time with my contractor management program. What do you all do? And you have maybe three or four people chime in that says, hey, we do a monthly round table, or we do an annual sit down, or we have our contractor do an SMS and we assess that. It's those peer-to-peer exchanges, I think, that are some of the best value that a trade association can bring to the table. And it often involves us stepping out of the way and getting out of the way so that you can have that kind of free flow of information.
Yeah, I mean, that's a part of one of the elements, right? I mean, that kind of external learning and sort of, you know, to have kind of a good safety culture in line with 1173 is the willingness to talk to colleagues and learn from them.
And Stuart, you know this, based on your, you know, days organizing the picks and the virtual tailgates. I mean, that's something that may not come naturally to the pipeline industry, just because I think we're looking to hold in some of our weaknesses, our shortcomings. But it's something I think where the industry is getting a little bit more acclimated with and leaning into more and more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I mean, you mentioned picks. For those that don't know, API does they call it the Pipeline Information Exchange, and it's a great, kind of closed door session where you can share what went wrong if you had an incident and have an honest discussion and frankly learn, talk about what you learned in that incident investigation. If it was a near miss, you know, what did you learn from that? And so those are very good discussions for sure. So, and I guess I didn't want to mess up the opportunity as well, Sam. I mean, so you mentioned pipelinesms.org. Folks haven't been to that website, encourage you to go there. Great resources available on that website. You mentioned email.
PipelineSMS@api.org. And so I check that frequently. I know our assessment team checks that frequently. So any questions, comments, concerns, shoot them in there and we'll get back to you shortly.
One of the things that I don't know if people realize on PipelineSMS.org is you can actually get a edit or a viewable copy of 1173. And so got to pay Sam a salary. So there are some costs associated with the document, but if you wanted to get an online viewable version, it's there accessible to folks. So don't forget about that out there. But as we think about the document, we talk about the document, Sam, tell us what's next for 1173. I think you guys are working on a new edition?
Yeah, we are. I'll maybe take a step back and take us back in time a little bit to when the document was first published, and that was 2015. The NTSB, after a number of high-profile transmission incidents, gave API a recommendation in 2012 and said, go create an SMS for pipelines like we have seen in aviation and nuclear and the chemical industries. So API published the first edition of 1173 in 2015, and all API standards and recommended practices are reviewed at least every 5 years, and they can be reaffirmed for 5 years, they can be extended for 2 years, or a subsequent edition can be published. And so in 2020, we applied for and were granted a 2-year extension. 2022, we applied for and were granted a 5-year reaffirmation. And to some, that might seem like we're delaying a subsequent edition of the first edition. But I think what we heard from a lot of management system experts was that the implementing community, no matter aviation, nuclear, or pipeline, needs at least 10 years to understand the document, understand the requirements that are in the document, implement those, and really start to see some change before whatever standards development organization comes in, rips the rug out, and changes the whole thing. So rather than try to change the document in 2020 or in 2022, we really have tried to be as deliberate and thoughtful about in this process as possible. And starting probably about 2 years ago, we formed a couple groups to look through the first edition and really develop a list of areas, but also requirements that weren't clear, areas that needed a little bit more clarity. And so we've gone through that process and made a number of changes to the first edition. One of those changes was in section 15 of the first edition, which had all of the safety culture content kind of jammed in the back in the section 15 document. And while it was separated by program element, it was almost an afterthought for an operator that was implementing SMS, because they would do their requirements, all the shall statements in the actual body of the document. And then they would turn to section 15, and there were these kind of vague statements that were sort of like requirements, but weren't quite shall statements. And so a lot of operators told us they didn't really know what to do with that part of the document. So what we've done in the second edition that I'll talk about in a second is taken a lot of that content and really tried to distill it down to the characteristics of safety culture. So when you're looking at implementing leadership and management commitment, you can actually tell that impact of leadership and management commitment on your safety culture by looking through some of those characteristics to be able to say, okay, well, if I'm trending in the right direction, here's how I might be able to tell my safety culture is improving based on leadership management commitment, based on operational controls. So we hope that that's a little bit more helpful for an operator. There are no requirements in that safety culture characteristics section. Another big change in the first edition was the creation of a very small operator annex. And this came out really in part from PHMSA's study on gas distribution implementation. It was dating back to the 2020 Pipes Act. PHMSA had a requirement to do a study of how distribution operators were implementing SMS, their progress, and the feasibility under which certain operators may not be able to do a full SMS as required by 1173. But PHMSA eventually said that small operators, some distribution, some gathering, some transmission, need what they called a size-scaled approach to PSMS. Basically, they need to be able to do SMS in a scaled-down version, but really implement the non-negotiables without doing all 234 shall statements. So the second edition has a very small operator annex, which if you hit certain criteria, you're able to do kind of the basics, the non-negotiables of SMS, and still kind of capture the intent of the document, but not necessarily get overwhelmed or bogged down by all of the statements that are in the document. So we put out a revised second edition for ballot in May. It passed overwhelmingly. We didn't have any negative votes. We did have about 400 comments submitted to it, which is actually, despite the number, actually relatively few for a recommended practice of this scope and significance. So we're actually starting in about 2 weeks on August 20th. We're starting the comment resolution process. API editorial will handle a lot of the copy edits, you know, Oxford commas, those kind of things. But the task group is open to anyone with a material interest. So anyone that would like to participate in those task group calls, it is open for those with a material interest to participate starting on the 20th. And again, we hope to publish or resolve all those comments in the next couple months and then publish the second edition in early 2026, still gives us about a year and a half of leeway before the reaffirmation expires. But we're really excited about the second edition. We think it improves clarity a lot, reduces some of the confusion. And we really hope that Small Operator Annex encourages small operators across the supply chain to really start this journey on implementation.
Yeah, I've been on just a couple small standard developments with GPA, and it is amazing how much work goes into just initially developing those documents and then keeping them up to date and all of the, it's a lot.
Well, I'm sure Stuart can expound on some of the early meetings on 1173, a discussion between audit and assessment, and how many times they probably went back and forth on things just like that.
I'd rather not.
Don't relive the nightmares though. Well, Sam, you'd alluded earlier to something I thought was interesting about the idea that regulation can make some of this safety culture and implementation more difficult. And I've kind of experienced that too with some of the regulations on safety. It's kind of easier for larger companies to dive in and be able to handle some of those than it is smaller companies. So it's not really scalable and adjustable as much as you'd want. So being this isn't regulatory required and, you know, it's voluntary. So what kind of advice would you give like a small operating company that's just starting into this, trying to, you know, get developed on this SMS stuff here?
Sure. I would just say just get started. Just take a couple small steps. And I think quickly you will realize you are, like I mentioned before, you're doing a lot of what SMS is. whether you think it or not, whether you've opened up the recommended practice or gone to the website, you're probably doing 75% of what's in SMS already. You just need to frame it a little bit differently or fit SMS to frame your program. So I would encourage you to really go on to that pipelinesms.org website and take advantage of the resources there. We have tactical booklets, which will help implementation. We have webinars and recorded workshops, which will help you kind of figure out what SMS is all about. There's examples of management commitment, so you can get your managers and your leaders on board. There's fact sheets. And then there's all kinds of tools that are out there. The notable practices tool, but there's also tools that are kind of framed up by what we call the maturity model and the tools roadmap. So SMS maturity is really kind of scaled on a 1 through 5 basis, with 5 being the most mature. And that maturity model will help an operator figure out where they are to be able to say, okay, well, I'm just starting out. I haven't done a gap assessment. I'm probably in level 1. And the tools that are kind of applicable and appropriate for your use, depending on what phase you are. So there's a gap assessment tool, there's an implementation tool, an evaluation tool. All of those resources are free. And while API might manage the website, they are not heavily branded with API. There's really no sense of ownership for us. I think what's something that's really unique about the Pipeline SMS industry team is that it's 8 trade associations all collaborating together. That's a little bit rare for the trade association crowd. Usually we live in our little fiefdoms and we protect it. And this is a little bit weird in that you're breaking down kind of those barriers between AGA and APGA on the distribution side, API, LIPA, and INGA on the transmission side, GPA midstream on the gathering side, and then 2 contractor organizations. And I think what we've come to realize is that we don't compete on safety. Safety is not a proprietary issue for us. And that an incident on a pipeline, whether it's a gathering line or a transmission line, looks and reflects poorly on all of us. And members of the public often don't care or don't care to differentiate whether that's a distribution line or a transmission line or whether it's carrying product or CO2 or crude. It just impacts them. And so The more we can become united in this effort to implement SMS, to improve safety culture, to improve safety performance, benefits all of us. And so I would just encourage you to start that journey. And I think that the more you're able to start it on this voluntary and proactive basis, the better we're able to make the argument that mandatory regulation is not the fix.
Thanks, Sam, for sharing that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of folks will be curious to look at that annex, the small operator annex, once it gets out there, and hopefully we'll find it useful.
Absolutely.
So we always like to end our show with the you come back on the podcast in a year and you are excited, you've seen success. What has happened in that year?
Well, hopefully in a year we'll have finished the second edition and published that. So that is hopefully out there and it's making a difference. We will have done the 2025 annual survey in a year. We'll be, fingers crossed, at 90% or so of pipeline mileage is responding to the survey and well on their implementation journey. And we'll have also likely conducted the 2026 safety culture survey among transmission and gathering line operators. The last survey of that kind we did was in 2023, and we surveyed over 31,000 employees across the transmission space. Really wide ranging, Canadian, US operators, API, LIPA, and INGA members. And so between those 3 things, I think those are 3 pretty significant developments that would hopefully be conducted within the next year. And so my hope is that those would drive some safety improvements. And I'm certainly naive to some extent, but I think we've seen some good safety improvements since the adoption of SMS. Looking across the industry, transmission, distribution, and gathering, we've seen a 13% reduction in incidents since 2015. 89 fewer incidents in 2024 compared to 2015. Naive to think that's all due to SMS, but also leak detection, integrity management, all of these programs that are coming out. But I think I would like to see us continue that strong trend and really try to continue to improve safety performance.
Yeah. I mean, that's very notable, though. I mean, that's something I don't think a lot of people are aware of. Mm-hmm. So that's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I think that's important is, you know, whether it's improvements in leak detection or improvements in integrity management, improvements in public awareness. I mean, I think you guys at API and the industry are really kind of getting unified in this kind of plan, do, check, adjust cycle that is so key to 1173. So whether it's your leak detection program, like what can you plan, do, check, and adjust, you know?
Absolutely.
Program. I think that kind of philosophical framework is going to resonate regardless of what program you're working on as an operator.
There you go, Stuart. You're already speaking the SMS language. Those early days of API and SMS.
Very down deep in there, you know? Coming out. No, this is good. Sam, appreciate your time. Always good to talk to you. Again, congratulations on becoming a parent sometime soon. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you both. And really appreciate what you guys do as well. I think the industry talking about these kind of things is maybe not something we do really well. And this kind of forum and this kind of medium, I think, is really great for it. So appreciate what you all do.
Thank you for listening to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. If you like what you have heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast @gmail.com.